This is CliffCentral.com.
Fear's a powerful thing. I mean, it's got a lot of firepower. If you can figure out a way to wrestle that fear, to push you from behind rather than stand in front of you, that's very powerful.
I have a dream.
Multiplying leadership, moving society, the millennial way.
You don't want to end up going after goals and dreams and neglect yourself.
Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Tau.
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Youth Leadership Platform. All right, welcome to another exciting episode of the Youth Leadership Platform right here on Cliff Central with your host, Bongani Tau. Follow the conversation on @SimplyBongani across all social media, @YOP Cliff Central on Twitter, Instagram, and Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. Today we engage the cast of Inxeba, and we actually talk about the backlash that the movie has received, being one of those movies locally produced that has won more awards than literally any movie that has been produced in South Africa.
Longer twice I have no power nearly second come with Tubatub. I was there.
We're telling that now we cannot.
Choban.
What you call an
Baba?
Mask and Amazon on Buzza or Quark. Call Nobufun and Bengo Waka yet.
Manyalo.
And this is what the director, John Trengove, had to say in an interview that I had with him on the line from Brazil.
Hey, Bongani. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks a lot for chilling with us at the Youth Leadership Platform. So kind of give us an overview of Inxeba and pretty much the subject of conversation today.
Well, I mean, you know, the film just... very broadly is about a love story really between two men, two guys who are taking care of initiates while they go through their initiation on the mountain. But the intention of the film started, you know, when we were having very early conversations about making a gay South African film. At that stage, we were quite disturbed by the representations of gay characters in films, and we felt that really the thing that we weren't seeing was authentic representations of a very important sector of our community, and that started this 5-year process of researching in Inxeba, and coming to the point where we were able to tell the experience of gay men on the mountain.
And who were some of the key people to contribute in this research and pretty much putting the whole movie together and the production?
Well, I think, you know, this is an important question. The film really is a collaboration between many different people, but mostly Xhosa men. So it started with, you know, a conversation between myself and Batana Wundler, who is a Xhosa man, a gay Xhosa man, and about his own complicated relationship with the initiation. And from there, we spoke to many other gay men. We had informal conversations at first about their experiences on the mountain, and also stories that they had heard, and these conversations led to more conversations as the research continued. It then you know, took an important turn where I met Thando Mkolozana. He's a important novelist in South Africa. He's also a Xhosa man who's been through the initiation himself.
Yes.
And the script that became the feature film was really developed in consultation with him. We would take a lot of our story ideas and he would filter them through his own experiences and make suggestions. And then there was obviously Malusi Bengu, who I think is joining you in studio, who was absolutely instrumental in writing the first draft of the screenplay, and also for periods of our research. So finally to say that this collaboration continued when we started casting. Every single person in the film is a first language Xhosa speaker.
Okay.
Everybody in the film has first-hand experience of the initiation. They've actually been through it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were casting the film, it was also important for some of our actors, particularly our lead actors, to bring some of their own experiences on board, their own ideas into the story. And so I would say that the film was also a collaboration with the cast.
When developing the movie with those different people, what are some of the things that you feel as a nation that are represented in the movie that are causing such a stir in the South African public? And are you at all surprised by the reception of the movie itself?
No, I mean, I think, you know, let's start there. I think obviously, you know, having spent the last 5 years developing and making this film, we were absolutely anticipating the strong reactions that it has provoked. But I think it's worth unpacking that a little bit, because there's a narrative that is circulating about the film, which is that it is exposing secrets about the initiation.
Yes.
This is completely false. And anybody, particularly Xhosa men who watch the film, will probably be able to attest to this. That the film only shows a very small portion of the experience of the mountain. And what it does show is nothing that isn't already in the public domain. You know, ever since Nelson Mandela wrote his autobiography, more than 20 years ago,
yes.
There is a fair amount about what happens on the mountain that is generally known. And the film doesn't transgress those boundaries. So it's a complete misnomer to say that the film is exposing these things, and that really prompts the question, well, why are people using this as an excuse for the outrage that's directed at Nkeba? Now, you know, obviously there's been a lot of speculation that the outrage is really about a kind of homophobic in nature, that the film dares to speak about the experiences of gay men on the mountain.
Yes.
and that it suggests that sex between men happens in these spaces. Again, all I can say to that is that gay sex happens everywhere in the world.
Yes.
And our story is based on real, tangible research and testimonials of people who have been to the mountain. This is not to say that it happens everywhere, every time the initiation is performed, but we do believe that there is a very plausible foundation for the love story that is at the center of the film.
And you know, watching the film last night, those are some of the sentiments that I felt about the movie, that it was more so about the narrative behind what happens at initiation school, and mostly with what happened between the two initiation teachers, that love affair that's forbidden, so to speak, in the culture itself, because a lot of people talk about that why did you have to include homosexuality when, you know, delving into the narrative of what happens at initiation school, which I think they're missing the point of what was going on in the movie. Do you share sentiments on that?
Yeah, I think there's so many more interesting conversations that we could be having about this film. You know, I think the reason why the initiation was important to the story is because the initiation is a space where boys are taught what it means to be a man, and that is what goes, that is what is at the heart of this narrative. Here you have a character who is teaching a boy about manhood, but he himself is questioning ideas about his own masculinity and what it means to be a man. And really, the irony of the story is that it is the so-called teacher who is the real initiate of the story.
Yes.
He is the one who is coming to a place where he has to assert who he is and figure out what he stands for as a man. So that's why the idea of the initiation is so central to Inkleba, even though the specific details and so-called secrets of the initiation are completely irrelevant to the narrative and don't actually feature.
And you know, I love how that metaphor is extended throughout the film, because there's points in time where the initiate, the main guy in the story, asks the teacher and actually says to him, "I know who you are, and you know who you are, but you do not want to come out and live fully and be free about who you are and be a man." You know, I love when he particularly uses those words, be a man and live to your true self, and being homosexual, that is. And you know, when you think about the contrast between him saying that and using the word man, and the other the teacher himself saying that's not being manly, being homosexual is not being manly.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, there's something else that I think was very important to us when we were writing the story, and that is, you know, we're not here to jump on a soapbox and wave a flag and insist that the rights of the individual are the most important thing. We really wanted to pay tribute to the importance of cultural identity, and for that reason, you know, Kwanda, when he speaks all of these things to Polani, there is a certain aggression in the way in which he insists on transparency at all costs. And obviously, without giving any spoilers, that is something that leads to some devastating consequences in the film. But really, you know, in the character of Polani, you know, we wanted to really represent this conflict between something that is so personal to him, that is at conflict with something else that is very important to him, which is his cultural identity.
And do you feel that that's what's at play a lot in modern society, that we're saying one thing, but in actual fact, what our lives portray is something totally different from what we say?
I think the thing that is resonating with what is happening in our society, and really this is why the film has found such strong resonance internationally, is everywhere we are dealing with the failure of masculinity.
Yes.
In the case of The Wound, particularly the failure of traditional masculinity, that we are having to own up to some very painful truths, which is that the way in which boys are taught to be men is leading to all sorts of crises and problems in the world at large. And so the story about Nkleba is not just about what happens in initiation schools, but it really kind of asks us to think about what are we teaching these young men, and what are the consequences in the outside world? I think that is the final question that the film leaves us with. So I think that is something that is really universal, and like we know, we hear stories about Harvey Weinstein and the kind of sexual predators in Hollywood all sorts of crises, you know, the rise of neo-Nazis in America and Donald Trump, and all of these things point to a crisis in masculinity, and this is something that we're facing at home as well, and really that's the real nerve that infects is tapping into, and I believe that is the real reason for the outcry and the sort of criticism that is directed at the film.
So it's safe to infer that actually in Inxeba, the wound is in the teaching of masculinity more than it is about the initiation school, because as men seeing the drastic acts and horrifying acts, actions of a lot of men that are happening internationally, we are literally bleeding as a species of men because of such actions which result from that poor teaching that we get.
Yeah, I think as men, you know, so many of us walk around with internal wounds that never quite heal. You know, we are presented with this impossible masculine ideal, this idea of this is how a real man behaves, and feeling, and this is not just gay men, I think this is most men, feeling inadequate in relation to that, and having to carry that inadequacy around as some sort of dirty secret. And then, of course, there's the societal wound. There is the wounds that inflicts on our society at large. So yeah, you know, the wound is obviously it's an idea that operates on different levels.
And with this wound that we have, you know, a question that comes to mind is how do we dress this wound and heal from it without, you know, what's happening around the world is men are just told to be animals and they just told to be vicious. So and that does not begin to resolve the problem that we have about masculinity, because it's just branding this gender to be a certain way instead of moving towards a solution. What do you think, or how should we be trying to address this in society?
Well, you know, it's you know, far be it from me to kind of lay out a solution for society at large. I think, you know, as an artist, I'm just I'm interested in you know, what are these sore points, and really just trying to kind of bring them into the light as authentically as I can. I think by just beginning to own up to what is going on, that is already you know, the beginning of the healing process.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a few very interesting screenings of the film, but you know, on more than one occasion, you know, straight men have come up to me after the screening and said, you know, this might as well be my experience. I also feel like I also feel like I'm inadequate in the face of some sort of masculine ideal. I'm also made to feel as if I fall short of what a real man is supposed to be. So I think, you know, there's something amazing about that dialogue, realizing that we are not alone in these feelings, realizing that this is something that is big, you know, that is big and that is affecting everybody, and just sort of owning up to these very simple but very uncomfortable realities, I think is the beginning. It's the beginning of healing.
Wow. Well, thanks a lot, and thank you very much for beautiful artistry. When I saw the movie, I really, really enjoyed how you shot everything and how you told the narrative, more so with how you shot the film, more than what happened between the dialogues. I think it was fascinating to watch. And the humor, I think people forget to talk about the humor in between the interaction between the different characters, and how as a black nation we can actually be educated about a very serious subject, but at the same time find a place for humor, which proves to be a very instrumental and efficient tool to address concerns.
Yeah, you know, that I think that's such a great point. You know, we obviously screened the film to a lot of international audiences before we had our first opportunity to screen it back home. And, you know, we were obviously very nervous when we had our first screening in Durban. We had no idea how people would react. We didn't know if they would, you know, outrage or walkouts or what, you know, what the reaction would be.
Yes.
And then, you know, within the first, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of that screening, the laughter started.
Yeah.
And it was literally the first time that we'd sat in a screening of the film where people were just laughing and laughing and laughing. And that was, you know, that was the most amazing gift to receive from a local audience. You know, this idea that actually if you're a Xhosa speaker, that there is an added layer of meaning in the film that you get that that an international audience doesn't necessarily understand.
Yes.
So that I think was very rewarding for us. And then as you say, this ability that we have as South Africans to laugh at ourselves under painful and uncomfortable circumstances.
Yes.
I think that's a real testament to who we are as a nation. Mm.
Lastly, I'd love to find out, 19 plus awards later, yes? From the movie? What do you anticipate?
I've got something around there, yeah.
Sheesh. Yeah. Is this one of those projects and productions that you've put your time and effort in and actually, you know, received a sense of fulfillment with the achievements that you've gotten out of it?
Yeah, all the kudos goes to this amazing team of people that helped to make this film. I think, you know, we were this band of outsiders. We stood up against huge amounts of criticism and people telling us that this was a bad idea. And we made the film in the face of all of that resistance. And so for the film to be awarded like this is extraordinary. You know, we worked really hard and it's really humbling that there are people out there who are prepared to acknowledge what this film is.
Yes.
So, but yeah, absolutely amazing. And again, all the glory goes to the cast and to the collaborators of Inkleba.
It's interesting how a lot of focus is moving towards Africa, and they want us to tell our stories because everyone is interested in what goes on in Africa. So what kind of message would you send to an artist like yourself that wants to tell an African story and a narrative that might be just as uncomfortable as it is to receive, like Inkleba, for some people?
Well, I think that, you know, hopefully, you know, the lesson for me and maybe for other, you know, local filmmakers is that, you know, making difficult films isn't necessarily a kind of career suicide. That actually there is an interest and an appetite for work that speaks about difficult subject matter. And as you say, I think we're also kind of waking up to an international audience that is very ready to hear from us. You know, and it's interesting because it's sort of coinciding with a mainstream audience that is also opening up to gay narratives. You know, in the past, you know, gay films were always considered to be this very niche thing that only speak to gay audiences.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, this year The Wound has been part of a bunch of films that are out internationally that have crossed over to mainstream audiences. So I think, you know, African film and queer film are sort of finding themselves in this moment where suddenly there is a kind of a spotlight and a renewed interest. And The Wound is very fortunate to be straddling both of those movements because it's so I think, you know, timing has a lot to do with the reception to the film and the success of the film.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. We hope that we're going to have more of these conversations and that when you're in South Africa, we can continue from where we left off. We're going to leave some time for the guests in the studio as well to engage in the narrative. And well done on your achievements and all the best for future productions and everything that you're working on next.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the opportunity to speak about the sort of, you know, more deeper and interesting aspects of the film. It's a welcome relief after all the controversy of the last week.
Uzahlala phefu kwingithiphele mina ze 8 ne. Ngikhona ngaseli manzi, ngikhona ngalala. Okunjalo ke nakuthi. Hlala vona.
Avoye ubona xolani, ndanga zethu.
Mangibangile abathathu kule game.
Jonga apha, ndizawuthanda uba ke. Uqinise isandla kule ntwana yam. Ya, le ntwana icela ubhetyebhetye mani, icela ubethe-ethe le ntwana.
ubuyela ndonke le ndawo ngoko yizikhumbula iijomi zakho konye ukubona uba unajoma ka okanye itsheri yakho ndiyakubona uba uyintoni kodwa wenathe ndingakho kuyivume loo nto
uyavuma sengcolisa isiko wena pha
nditsho njani nakhangathi
kwata
xa beye esixhoseni ukuzithetha izinto zalapha
nendiko ndikwetha
Closing the trailer are two characters, Gwanda and Xolani, played by the famous singer and songwriter Nakane, who has received a lot of backlash on Twitter about selling the Xhosa culture by taking part in shooting this film. Doing a tour in Europe, it has been very difficult to get him to come into studio, so we caught up with him online from overseas, and this is what he had to say.
I think a lot of people who are sort of speaking negatively about the film and violently against the film, having seen the film. So I'm not really speaking from a place of any knowledge, but from ignorance, and assuming things about the film that are not necessarily true. For example, people assume that the film is an expose of the culture, and that we are sullying the culture, right, and exposing it to people that the culture should not be exposed to, which is a problem within itself, within the Xhosa community, but that's another conversation. You know, a sort of elite information, which I have a problem with. But anyway, that's my own shit. But for me, the film was less, when I read the script, I realized that the film was less about the actual initiation and more about the wound of hyper and toxic masculinity and homophobia when put up against our traditions.
Yes.
Because people who identify as not heterosexual, because there's a lot in between there, are seen as people who shouldn't, number one, A, identify as that, or B, if they do practice same-sex sex, then they should be ashamed of it and not tell anyone about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the premise of the film. It starts sort of asking those questions. So what do we do when we put people who love the culture, who practice the culture diligently?
Yes.
I'm talking about the two caregivers, not the initiates.
Yes.
but are also victimized by the culture.
Yes.
What do they do? What do they have? That's my answer for your question.
So do you think that, you know, with how, you know, as a society we've been conditioned, there's a lot of people, like for instance, the character that you play, that are living in the cultural shadows, who can't really come out, and I use this deliberately as a double entendre, because of what we are taught about what being a man is and our role in society as a male figure.
Completely. I mean, when I was doing the... I mean, and I'm going to keep on referring back to the script and referring back to the film, you know, and less to do with... Anyway, the point is, when I was preparing for the role, I went to spaces that I knew that those kind of guys were. I mean, like, these men who are practicing this idea of what masculinity is.
Yes.
So a lot of places where men drink. And it's interesting what pills can do. It's interesting what a change in walk and sort of vocal timbre can do.
Hmm.
You know, the performance of masculinity. I was about to do the audition for the film, and I went and I got the clothes, you know, that Xolani, that I sort of thought Xolani would wear.
Okay.
And I, you know, I got a good, and I sat down and I watched people. And had I walked in there as Nakane, the reaction would have been different. But walking in as who I assumed Golani would be was a little bit more interesting. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, I fit in, and I was also performing masculinity because identity is a performance.
Okay.
To the point that we practice it until it becomes second nature that we don't think it's a performance anymore, but it's a performance nonetheless. We can see how, for example, different clothes make us feel. You know, when we put on a suit, suddenly our posture's up and we walk differently, mm-hmm. you know, and we speak differently. You know, whereas when we're wearing jeans, we speak differently, you know.
Yes.
Because of the sort of the shift in the performance of identity. But those guys, I grew up around them. I grew up around those guys who were obviously more fluid in their sexual desires. Maybe not identity.
Mm-hmm.
The identity was completely heterosexual.
Yes.
Straight men, you know, very sort of hyper-masculine.
Yeah.
But the sexual desires were much more fluid than what they would ever admit to.
Yeah.
Because those are the guys who came up to me when I was a teenager and were filling me up.
Hmm.
You know? And then wake up in the morning and pretend like nothing happened.
Hmm.
You know? Those are the guys who were hitting on me when I was at Ndabeni and joking. Do you know what I mean? Things like that.
Yeah.
So I know those people personally. Which is an interesting part of this conversation.
Yes.
Because a lot of the argument from naysayers is that, has this happened to you? Because if it has happened to you, I mean, not to me, I was watching the ANN7 interview with Malusi Bengu.
Okay.
And one of the guys was like, if this has happened to you, then we can have another conversation. And I was watching the interview and my hand was lifting going, hello. And I'm not the only one that this has happened to. This has happened to a lot of younger men who are given over to be taken care of.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, find themselves in compromising situations.
Hmm.
And not that the film's about that.
Way, yeah.
But,
and don't you think it's an irony that a lot of these men that are supposed to instill a sense of masculinity into these boys who are the initiates, who are doing these things, living double standard lives, are quite an irony in themselves, that there's certain things that they don't want to man up for, but they're expecting these kids to become men and learn from them.
Well, because human beings are complicated, you know? We can lie. One of the things that human beings are very good at is lying to themselves. I mean, we are.
Yeah.
And it takes an incredible amount of skill and practice, you know.
Yeah.
You repeat something to yourself enough until you believe it.
Hmm.
I hate this. I hate the fact that homosexuals exist. But me sleeping with my friend is not homosexual because we're men. You know, we're not going around there. We're not feminine. We're not, yeah, because we're men. What we do is different. Because we don't identify as gay or bisexual or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. And that's the interesting thing about it is that it's the... What I've realized in a lot of conversations, before the film even existed, when I was a teenager and I'd come out of the closet and I was talking to male relatives,
yes,
was that the act itself wasn't necessarily what people were against. It was... You're not being ashamed of it, that people were really sort of struck by it.
Mm.
I was like, yeah, I sleep with men, and I'm not ashamed of it. And I can tell you that. You deal with it. Why is it your business, first of all? Because it has nothing to do with you, right?
Mm.
Why do you care so much who I have in my bed? You know, I don't care who you fucking sleep with because it's your life. So... It's interesting to me how, for example, those two characters can live those devil lives because they can explain it to themselves, you know.
And tell themselves that they're men and they're not actually gay.
They're not gay. And maybe they're not gay because, that's another conversation. Is that like, just because you sleep with other men doesn't necessarily mean you're gay.
Hmm.
I'm just problematizing this a little bit.
Okay, now we're opening a different territory. So to someone who's as artistic or wants to be as artistic as you are, and I think, you know, this is relayed in your music and your performance and in everything that you do, which I personally appreciate, and I know a lot of people that do. What kind of message would you relay to someone that wants to be like you or someone like you that receives so much backlash for, you know, relaying important messages in society through their art?
I've been getting this question a lot recently. And no one should ever want to be like me. Like, for example, the word that everyone uses now is influencer,
okay,
which really makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to influence people to be like me because I'm still figuring it out.
Okay.
You know? You come into my work and see yourself. That's the point of it.
Okay.
Don't see me.
Hmm.
You know? I'm just a mouthpiece.
Hmm.
Yes, sure, this agency. I made the work happen and I made decisions, intellectual, emotional, and psychological decisions for the work to exist. But it's for you to see yourself and for you to do what you want to do, you know. But just know that it's going to be hard. People are assholes sometimes. People... And that's saying it lightly, you know.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I've been receiving these messages for about a year now, and I was saying this to a friend of mine who I haven't spoken to in a long time, who was like, are you okay? Like, I am now. You know, like, someone can say fuck you for a year to the point where you're like, okay, like, really, like, what?
It doesn't matter to me anymore. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't. And the thing is that, like, this behavior reveals nothing about me, more about the people who are sort of saying these things to me. But the point is that, like, so whoever wants to be sincere and open in their art needs to know that technology has given us platforms for people to voice their opinions, however unqualified or maybe not unqualified is not the right word because everyone's qualified in their opinion. However, maybe wrong or right they are.
Yeah.
You know. So you have to go out there knowing that it's going to get harsh. My drama teacher also used to remind us when I was in high school that once you put the work out there, it's no longer yours. People can do what they want to do with it.
Hmm.
Just do the best work that you can.
Yasmin.
Which is hard because you spent like 4 years writing an album and then someone listens to it for 45 minutes and says,
and they pick it apart.
Exactly, right? But I do the same when I go to galleries. Someone has been making a painting for like 8 years, and I look at it for 30 seconds, and I'm like, I don't like it. So why would I expect any less?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
it's something that I try to change, of course, but to sort of engage with art. And engage with things that I may not necessarily agree with more empathy.
Thanks a lot for this. I think this is going to be an eye opener for a lot of the masses that are going to be able to listen to your voice about this matter. Not the people you have to tell constantly that they should come back to you when they start making sense.
That was my first. I think this was my first reply.
Yeah.
Was first to say because I normally don't reply. I was just like, you know what, dude, this is not making any sense. Because this guy says, you know, it is just. I was on the train. I was going to dinner with friends last night. And this guy says, it was bad enough that you came out with your sexuality. Now you're exposing our culture. And I was like, wait a minute. What are you saying?
What?
I'm actually not even going to think about this.
Yeah.
Come back to me when you've made sense. I was just, it didn't even annoy me. It just, I was like, this is just stupid.
Well, thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot for hanging with us, and all the best with your tour in the United Kingdom, and hopefully maybe we can have a sit down and chat sometime when you're back in the country.
Definitely. I'm excited.
Okay.
Thank you, man.
We'll do that. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Cheers.
That thing is unsanitary for the proper community to take it seriously. Maybe just look into what you need.
You have assimilated it.
Seriously. So that nonsense of saying there are proper channels, there are proper institutions.
Yeah, right. Mokubayanza, Westland, Yote Fubezo, is sexuality. Zingana, Pizindo, they're homosexuals, Nantoni, Kaya.
This is CliffCentral.com.
And that was John Trengove, the director of Inxeba, and Nakane Toro, who's one of the lead actors in the film. I think and hope that through the conversation that we had, that it was an eye-opener to a different ballgame of the narrative of what Inxeba, the movie, is about and what it should stand for in society. As well, I think as a South African-produced movie, guys, we should be having a lot of these outrages about movies from South Africa that are produced internationally stealing our narrative. But go and see this one and have kind of a perspective about the movie, because I think a lot of people that spoke bad about it are people that haven't seen the movie. Joining us on the line, though, is a young queer activist and a founder of a queer NGO, and that is someone that actually spoke for the movie and spoke for homophobia in the narrative that a lot of the people were expressing on Twitter during the last week and since the movie has aired at Stekenico. Welcome to the studio and welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform, Sivuile.
Hi, Bangani, thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for hanging with us as well.
My pleasure.
You spoke a lot on Twitter about homophobia from all the comments that a lot of the people were expressing on Twitter. I'd like us to build now this conversation from that front and how this made you feel. What are your general thoughts and ideas on what was happening on the Twitter streets?
Sorry, man, but I need to keep breaking. I'm
asking Guti. I just wanted to find out your thoughts, since you were very opinionated about what is happening in the Twitter streets, the general idea and thoughts that you have about what a lot of people had to say, especially with regards to what felt like homophobia.
Okay, well, in regards to what felt like homophobia, it was seen in the sense of people already judging something because of what the storyline entailed.
Yeah.
It wasn't about anything else but what the storyline is. So when they heard about a homosexual relationship happening in a cultural setting, that's the thing that clicked to them, the homosexual aspect of it. So it wasn't, so people just pushed off after that. They didn't even want to engage any further, giving them countless opportunities to watch and engage and be able to form an informed opinion so that we could basically be unpopular about it. So you'd find that people will really disregard you, and even the slurs you get, because I remember I wrote a lot of threads about it. And you get the feedback from a lot of, especially because I'm learning from the recent case. Because it was PE and East London and part of men who were very vocal about it and very, very, very rude and very dismissive.
Yes.
On our experiences there. So just them who didn't even want to hear about it, but it was, yeah, it was the basic skills that just came back. So yeah, the homophobic aspect of it, came in that sense that people just didn't want this kind of story being told in this kind of setting.
Yeah. I'd like you to be a bit slow there so that we can hear every single word as you express yourself. what I wanna find out as well, you know, during this conversation, a lot of what's happening and what's being revealed to the public is the acceptance of LGBT plus people in and within our society. And being a democratic society, it's quite, you know, a challenge to see people reacting like this to people that are part of a democratic society, but can't be accepted or won't be accepted by certain people.
Look, it's a process. Everything is a process. Dismantling of apartheid is a process. It takes time for people to accept different things that are different to them. When I speak on LGBTI issues, I speak of how in 1994 we were included in the constitution of being accepted as being equal. But it took a further 11 years for us to be able to give it marriage rights, even though it aren't even fully marriage rights. You know, they sort of amended there and there. So all these things, all these processes, even in this democratic process that we have, they all take time. And unfortunately, it would be nice if at the time would also translate to people's acceptance. But the difference is that people's acceptance is taking longer to infiltrate the society, because now you see things that shouldn't be happening, especially in this generation that we're in, where we speak about everything, where everything is out in the open, where people have the opportunity to learn about new stuff, learn about gender, learn about sexuality, take time out to read a book, Google some words, and inform your mind. So we're living in that time that people just don't seem to want know things that are different, and our equality now seems like something that is forceful to them, that we want to be seen in the same light, because we are marginalized society, but they don't seem to be wanting to see us as people. So it really is a tough thing that we're going through, but really it's all going on, and we're trying to fight for the inclusion of this.
And there's a lot of powerful one-liners that Kwanda says in the movie. Yes. And one of them is, how can love destroy a nation? You know, referring specifically to the queer love that, I mean, love essentially makes us gods, because God is love. And
just
build from that. What are your thoughts there?
No, honestly speaking, like, love is universal. It's so weird, but what I have realized, especially when people are trying to marginalize us, is that our queer love is marginalized in the sense that everything about queer love has to be sexual. So as soon as people get into that mindset of sexualizing everything, then they have sections and things that they probably would never have done and stuff like that. So people don't want to just love a face value like a heterosexual love. Our kind of love has to be dissected, and it has to be looked at certain different times. And for some people, that's for all the people, for instance, I don't think they want to know what happens in the bedroom or other people. They know what they did in the bedroom, but it's a different view what we do in the bedroom.
Yeah.
When you explain it like that, and that's why I always speak about, I think, sexualizing queer people. Because once you sexualize them, then now people are looking at them at the bedroom eyes and thinking, oh God, this love is different because they do. And that's not how you should look at it.
Yeah.
Queer love is just love. It's love is universal.
How can we conscientize people in this regard to move to a South Africa? Because we speak a lot about equality in this democratic society, and there's a lot of things that we still need to fix. Feminists are out there marching for their rights, the LGBT plus people are still out there marching, and a lot of people still are fighting for inclusion 20 years later into a constitution that recognized all these people, but we just didn't move in the direction of that recognition.
And we didn't. And so what do you want to know about that?
So
how do we
conscientize? Yes.
This is one of the biggest things that we struggle with right now. It's trying to reach people who are unreachable.
Yes.
And I say unreachable in the sense that people just push off. People will want to tell you that they want to learn, they want to know, and they want to be well versed of the country, but they just don't make themselves available when you do them. So our biggest issue right now is reaching the people that we're trying. So what we we're trying to do in the Eastern Cape, for instance, is we're trying to align LGBT, so I would call it as a marginalized group. So we, when we have in probably a campaign, we'll do a whole youth campaign focused on different things, and LGBT, so I will be there as well, so that when young minds go there, they don't necessarily go for LGBT sensitization also, only they're going for other types of sensitization that LGBT is there as well.
Yes.
So sort of like an inclusion into other programs that could make people come out and say, okay, oh, you know what, I went there for HIV/AIDS, the pay, I came back knowing A, B, and C. And all these people are so good because I didn't know this and this and this. And that's what we're trying to achieve with the campaigns we're trying to do.
Okay. And how do people follow the narrative, like yourself and the organization?
My organization is called Cater for All. We're based in East London in Mpazane, but we work with the throughout the public to make so. We've got a website, www.caterforall.org.za. And yeah, we're on social media, Facebook, Cater for All, Twitter, Cater for All_NGO. And that's, yeah, because I know we don't take pictures because we work with marginalized and vulnerable people, so we don't have Instagram. We don't like putting their pictures out there because some of them are positive and
I see.
Going through stuff here.
Yeah.
So and we really don't share much of pictures.
Mm-hmm. And your personal social media accounts?
My name is Sivuile Mchemla, and that's where you can find me on Facebook. And on Twitter, I am Lay Vuile. That's S-L-A-Y for Lay. Vuile, V-U-I-L-E.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the YLP. And, you know, all the best with trying to change a lot of these narratives and helping really our society be more embracing of different people that you make this Rainbow Nation really what it is, a Rainbow Nation. And
exactly.
Yeah, and moving into a direction where no one really has to explain who they are, what they are, or try to fit in or belong. Or, you know, fight for a certain kind of rights relative to them. Thank you very much for joining us, Nair.
And thank you for having me. Thank you for this opportunity, Mwani.
All right.
And thank you for speaking on the movie and speaking on all these questions that I've
been. No, it's our pleasure. We pride ourselves as young leaders, and conversations like these are needed much in society. To our listeners, the conversation still continues on at YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram, at Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. Myself, Bongani Tau, at Simply Bongani across all social media. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we have some exciting episodes coming up and guests that are coming up, so you want to stay tuned to the Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.